Rating America's Presidents is a classic book by Robert Spencer, who is known mostly for writing his books warning about radical Islam. Jihadwatch.org is his website. But Rating America's Presidents evaluates the different presidents we've had through the years. George Washington, our first president under the Constitution, he gives a 10. We're going to be talking about some of the early presidents, and I think we'll throw in Abraham Lincoln there as well. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Robert, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to talk to you, Jerry. Thank you.
Now, just real fast, what is it that made you interested in writing a book like this in light of the fact that you're known mostly, and by the way, you're a New York Times best-selling author on, you know, all sorts of books related to Islam, but why did you decide to write this book?
Well, actually, this is something I've wanted to do for years, Jerry. This is something I was very interested in, even as a very young boy, and I thought that it was particularly a good time to do it because I was reading a lot of ratings that were coming out toward the end of the Trump presidency. From CNN, from various historians, various journalists, and so on. And I thought, you know what I have never seen is a rating of the various presidents based on did they put America first and were they good for Americans? Most of the time, and I've been used to this over the years, when I see ratings of the American presidents, it's based on various leftist presuppositions because most of the historians are leftists. So I thought that I would try to give a little counter motion to that.
Yeah. Well, the presidents through the years that you rated the highest would be, okay, George Washington. You gave Andrew Jackson an 8, Tyler an 8. That's interesting. Abraham Lincoln a 10. Ulysses S. Grant an 8. Chester Arthur an 8. Moving down, Coolidge, you gave him a 10, but before him, Harding, 9. That's interesting. And then Reagan, 9, and Trump, 10. But a lot of these other ones, it's a 4 here and 5 there. In some cases, even 1, or in some cases, even 0. That's interesting. Comment on the what is it that all the positive ones that you rated have in common, and why did you rate them like?
Well, you know, all of them are people who left America in a better position than it was in before they were president. They did not increase the welfare system. They did not get us involved in unnecessary wars, although, of course, war, it's not as if they were pacifists when you have Lincoln in the on the list. But they were generally doing what was best for the people of the United States. That is, they left the people of the United States better off economically and left America better off militarily in the world, generally. And so you take somebody like Harding. Harding came in right after World War One, and during World War One, President Woodrow Wilson had instituted a great many measures of only marginal constitutionality, restricting the freedom of speech, particularly in regard to criticism of the war, and beginning all the big government statism that we see institutionalized today. Harding rolled it back, cut taxes, cut regulations, the economy started to boom. He kept us out of the internationalist adventure of the League of Nations, which we now see is pretty much useless in the United Nations, if not counterproductive. And so I think he is a good example of what makes for a great American president, somebody who's maligned or ignored by conventional historians. But when you think about him from the standpoint of putting Americans first, then there's really nothing to criticize him on.
All right, let's talk about George Washington. What was his legacy? I mean, which, by the way, that could be a whole discussion in and of itself. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're talking about George Washington, you're talking about the man who set every precedent for what a president was supposed to be like. And I think one of the main great things that he did, actually, was leave office. Because, of course, he was wildly popular. He remains the only president elected by a unanimous vote in the Electoral College. And that was twice he was elected unanimously. Now, he could have stayed president as long as he wanted to, but at the end of two terms, he wanted to set a precedent for the peaceful relinquishing of power. Yeah. Now, you look at some of these superannuated senators and congressmen that we have today, and the fact that the president of the United States is a career politician who is pushing 80 years old and has been in Washington since the early 70s, I think we need a lot more application of George Washington's example, that the idea of a public servant doing service to the public and then leaving when his service is over, that's been lost. And now we have these time servers who arrogate as much power to themselves for their own self-aggrandizement. So if we had people paying a little more attention to George Washington in that regard, I think we would be better off.
Excellent point. So George Washington was the precedent president. What else do you want to add, though, to George Washington? Because his legacy really is very strong, and there's a reason he's called the father of our country.
Well, another thing, he warned about foreign entanglements in his farewell address in 1796. And, of course, his warning was completely ignored almost from the beginning. But I think it becomes clearer every day how right he was. If you look at Iraq and Afghanistan, for example, our two latest large-scale military misadventures, you're talking about a country that was not involved in 9/11, Iraq, and a country that was involved in 9/11, and we stuck around for 20 years to try to engage in Wilsonian nation building and to put it on the footing of a Western-style secular republic, which was doomed from the start. And we wasted an immense amount of resources, of human lives, of trillions of dollars for nothing. And the same people are in charge now who were in charge when we first went in Afghanistan. If we had gone in and neutralized the al-Qaeda training camps and left them to their own devices, we would be in a much better position today. Yeah. But George Washington's advice in this regard has been completely forgotten.
George Washington, in that farewell address, he warned against factionalism. Are you familiar with that? What is he talking about there?
Well, he was against political parties. He thought that the formation of political parties would not be good for the United States. Now, political parties were already forming during his presidency and became explicit organizations soon after his presidency. And so it's kind of hard to imagine America without them. But you look now at how ferociously partisan our political class has become and how something that's a perfectly good idea has to be rejected if it comes from Donald Trump, say, because he's a Republican, and so the Democrat political class has to oppose him no matter what, even if what he's saying is sensible and true. This is a result of the kind of factionalism that Washington was warning against.
Yeah, another thing, too, about Washington, and then we'll move on to other presidents, but in his farewell address, he said how religion and morality are indispensable supports to our political prosperity, and yet today, because of a misunderstanding of the First Amendment, we basically have many trying to impose the separation of God and the state and godly influence in our Judeo-Christian heritage, etc.
Yeah, the consequences of that, I think, remain yet to be seen, but they're going to be severe. And you take, for example, the latest appointment of this appalling, really pervert is the only word you can use, to the Department of Energy by the Biden administration. It's the kind of thing you see in decadent, declining empires. And I think that it's hard to escape that impression of the United States right now.
I'm not familiar with I think I know who you're talking about, but basically this is some sort of transgender person who's been appointed for a service or a position within the Energy Department. Is that right?
This is a man named Sam Brinton. He's not transgender. But he's even worse, if you can imagine that. He's been appointed to be Deputy Assistant Secretary of Spent Fuel and Waste Disposition in the Office of Nuclear Energy, which is part of the Department of Energy. And I've written a couple of articles about him, full of copious quotes about his proclivities, which are quite outlandish and disgusting. And he's completely upfront, of course, and open about them. It reminds me of when Caligula, the Roman emperor in the time of the great decadence of the Roman Empire, made his horse a senator. And Mr. Brinton engages in what is known as puppy play, which has men pretending to be dogs. And so Caligula put a horse in the Senate and Biden's put a dog in the Department of Energy.
Okay, let's move on to the second and third presidents of the United States, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. You gave Jefferson a higher rating than you did John Adams. John Adams was, of course, George Washington's vice president, and he was also in the same political party, although there were no political parties then, but they were both Federalists. But comment on those two presidents, two and three.
John Adams is an interesting, one of the most interesting individuals ever to be president. And he's a complex personality. But one thing that is clear about him is that he couldn't stand criticism. And instead of trying to deal with that on a human level, he had passed the Alien and Sedition Acts, which essentially forbade and criminalized criticism of the president. Now, this, of course, is an extremely dangerous provision that cuts against the First Amendment. And there was no judicial review in those days, so it wasn't declared unconstitutional, although it almost certainly would have been had judicial review been in place. And it was a very dangerous thing. We're now in another age in which the freedom of speech is under attack. And Adams, luckily, his Alien and Sedition Act did not remain law. It expired at the end of his term and was immediately set aside and not renewed. But that's the reason, the primary reason for the low rating with him.
Let me interrupt you. Yeah, I think maybe John Adams' great contributions to America were prior to his presidency, because as a founding father, he was really critical. I mean, he's even the one who recommended that George Washington serve as our commander-in-chief of the Continental Armies, and that, of course, led ultimately to his presidency and all the rest of it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jerry. And in this book, I do deal with the men as president.
Yeah,
and
right.
I
Makes
do
sense.
Not deal with them before their presidency or after. You can also say the same thing about Thomas Jefferson. He was much better. He's a great man and revered by patriotic Americans to this day because of what he did before he was president. His presidency was not actually so hot.
Okay, we have about a minute left. Let's say maybe we can just round this discussion off with a conversation or comment about Abraham Lincoln, whom you rated 10.
Is one of the most extraordinary people ever to be president. And he really is, I think, one of the greatest all time because of his rhetorical ability. Not just that he was a great speaker and writer, but that he was a great thinker. And that a problem that had confronted the American presidents from the beginning, slavery, and they had tried to, many of them had just tried to kick it down the road and postpone the inevitable. Lincoln grasped it head on and dealt with it theoretically and philosophically, such that he was able to articulate an anti-slavery position in a way that no president had been able to before, and to undercut the pro-slavery position. So he changed the whole nature of the debate at the time and got us out of the morass that we were in with Polk, Taylor, Pierce, Buchanan. I skipped Fillmore, but he's just the same. These presidents who are trying to ignore the moral question involving slavery and deal with it simply on the basis of popular sovereignty and you people like slavery, you can have it over here, and you don't like it, you can not have it over there. And finally, he was able to deal with it head on. Now, of course, if that involved the Great Civil War and the sacrifice of thousands of lives, and that's a terrible tragedy. But Lincoln understood and articulated even that in his second inaugural address.
Oh, one of the best speeches ever.
Yes, the judgment of a just God over a sinful people and the eradication of the sin from the people. I think that, you know, a lot of this is going to play out. We don't have our Lincoln yet in regard to the abortion issue, but one day that person will arise.
Wow. Okay, we're out of time. Robert Spencer, rating America's presidents, jihadwatch.org. Thank you so much for joining us. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.
Great. Bye-bye now.